Forget about him. You're having a fun time, aren't you?
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This Melrose Place. Today's episode is Season 4, Episode 11, Free Kimmy. And now, here are your hosts,
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello.
Hello. Hello, everyone. Hello, especially to our Patreon supporters who can look forward to Again With This episode 62 dropping September 3rd. How is it September already?
Yeah.
We will be watching Josie Bissett in the video for Junkyard's Simple Man. Don't know what any of that means. We didn't really either, but we're about to find out. Baby Josie Bissett was in a music video, and we're going to talk about it. Join us at patreon.com/againwiththis for that and many other discussions. Joining at any level, you get access to them all.
Indeed. And let us get into this episode, starting with our hybrid, undetangleable C-plot. While Amanda's Parisi problems persist, Kimberly bones the pool boy, and no, I will not make a pun about her getting wet, so just grow up.
No.
Okay. For some reason, there's a memorial service of sorts for Jack in Los Angeles, where he lived for about 3 seconds. I mean, No one is there when Amanda rolls in. It's just like him lying in state, I guess, but still, it's weird.
A mafioso from another town having his name on the little like pin board outside. Sure. Mm-hmm. Totally believable.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, I guess she is there for appearance's sake. She is also in a very shiny Rolls gold suit, which is what tipped me to the fact that it wasn't like a real memorial. But anyway, as she's standing over the coffin, Nick, the lawyer, enters and they do some unmemorable bickering before she exposits that he needed her signature on something. Which is, the family has arranged for Nick to ship the body back to Miami for burial. In which case, why is any of this happening in Los Angeles? But whatever. Since Amanda is still Jack's legal spouse, she has to sign off. And it would help, he says, if she signed it Amanda Parisi. But she's like, that's not my name. Just kidding. She just says it's not her name. That song wasn't out yet. And as she's signing the papers on the coffin, real class move you can see in the visual aids. He offers to open the casket to give her one last look. She passes, adding that she trusts she won't be seeing Nick again. Yes.
I mean, I kind of wanted her to open the coffin because this is a soap opera.
Yeah, that's a good point. I didn't think of that, but yeah. Truly.
I mean, he extubated himself. Fuck knows.
Yeah. Also, I mean, Antonio Sabato Jr. obviously has bad agents if they weren't like, you know, put him in the coffin for one last episode, get him one more episode's worth of pain.
One more day, yeah.
As Amanda's trying to walk out, Nick grabs her by the arm and says, of course, and says she better hope he's right or it could be her in a casket. Yeah. Except for real, he is a mobster. Then, in Peter's office, Kimberly saltily tells him she wants her monitor off. He says she's not ready. She thinks she is. Shouldn't this be up to a person employed in the legal profession to break this tie? Just wondering. Anyway, Peter says he already got Kimberly a work release. How much more does he want her to do? Which, you know, fair, considering the charges I think are still pending against her. Unclear, but anyway.
Yeah.
Then Amanda calls, clip two.
You left early. When I woke up, you were gone.
I was feeling claustrophobic.
Claustrophobic. Want me to put a skylight in the bedroom?
Just thought that was funny. So I called for that clip. Also, Kimberly arranged for every bedroom to have a skylight informally.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Does anyone remember that she blew the shit up? No? Okay, moving on.
So after Peter has hung up, Kimberly tries to diagnose him the way she would a caller to her show, clip three.
Your intimacy issues are always getting you in trouble, aren't they?
Well, Kimberly, we're not here to discuss my issues. Besides, your hour's up.
You've got a hero complex, and it can be very off-putting for the person you're involved with. Even make them feel claustrophobic.
I think it's time that we cut back on our sessions here.
Why? Because I'm getting better or because you're having problems with Amanda? Am I the cause?
I talked to the doctors at the state psychiatric clinic. They agree that it's time to cut the cord.
Well, maybe they're right. Maybe the line between patient and doctor has been crossed. So I'll think about it. As long as you promise to get this damn bracelet off me. Deal?
Whatever. My objections are stipulated. Yes, I agree that it's time for you to cut back on your sessions, especially since he is a surgeon.
Yep. Yeah. Honestly, neither of you is a psychiatrist, despite the fact that the show has just decided, well, doctor means doctor of everything. So,
Lord.
Anyway, then it's Jack's actual funeral in Miami. Nick walks over to greet a Bobby as the latter is exiting a limo, expositing that this Bobby works at the Pentagon. Clip four.
It's not much different than working for my family. Same madness, different faces.
Yeah, your father's been looking for you.
How's he holding up?
Yeah, we all knew Jack liked to live dangerously.
I heard he got involved with some woman who didn't like his better etiquette.
Not just some woman, Bobby. It's his former wife, Amanda.
Amanda?
Of the Kennebunkport Amandas? Like,
yeah.
Really? With the exposition?
Seriously.
Also, sorry, go ahead.
Well, just, I know this is resetting for new viewers, we get it, but as Jack's brother, he would have heard this already, like, find another way.
Yeah. Also, I suppose we should note that Bobby is played by the literal Taj Mahal.
Yeah.
The man is a giant building.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And we've, if you were a Sex and the City watcher, you've seen his ass. It's John Enos III.
Yeah, he was Mr. Too Big on Sex and the City. Literally, that's what his nickname was. He was a Samantha partner.
I can't argue. Like, what size is that suit jacket? 112? Crazy.
Yeah, this is not to say he's like, you know, overweight or whatever. He's just large. He's like tall and wide. He's like, like Paul Johansson. Same kind of thing.
Yeah.
Anyway, Bobby then goes over to hug the Parisi patriarch, Vincent. He is David Groh, a.k.a. Joe from Rhoda, but also the truly horrible husband/father in the Rip from the Joel Steinberg headlines episode of Law & Order in season one. Only 5 episodes of the one with Calabro that we just talked about on the Patreon.
Yeah. He's also Judge Joel Thayer in another pretty famous Law & Order episode in which he's stalking Jane Kaczmarek.
Right. Oh, that's a good one, too.
Mm-hmm.
So then, at Michael's party, which we'll get to, Peter crabs about Amanda running hot and cold and avoiding him. Like, bro, maybe your golf outfit has something to do with it. He's worn to this party. You'll see it in the visual aids. It's not flattering.
No.
And knowing that he's a golfer in real life, like, it just makes me think he was, like, actually out on the links, and then someone called and was like, you're supposed to be here today. And was like, oh, fuck, no time to change.
He's like clomping along in his little golf cleats, like click, 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 click. They had to cut that out. But it really is that like Tony Soprano golf shirt where it just like it goes down to the elbow. Like, guys, no.
Anyway, forced into it, Amanda says she doesn't think that they should see so much of each other. And then Kimberly beeps Peter and Amanda's like, bye. And then we see what the beep was about. Kimberly is swimming laps at the pool at the complex when Peter responds to her page bitchily. She looks at the monitor on her wrist, which is somehow back there on her hand that's not broken anymore. And marvels that it's waterproof, apparently, the monitor, not her hand. And then she claims to have called him because she had a panic attack. He accuses her of trying to ruin his night with Amanda, which you were not having, by the way. And they bicker about who has it worse in their current arrangement, ending with her threatening to hassle Peter until she's free. So then she comes down the next morning to see a blonde piece of beefcake, I guess, skimming the pool. I think in the visual aids, I called him, like, less cute Jeremy Renner, and I stand by that. That's the vibe.
Mm-hmm.
But they only make eyes at each other because she's looking for Matt, who does not invite her in. She had found some of her old med school notebooks, and he's actually grateful to have them as study aids for a second until she tries to extend their human connection, and he's all eye-rolly about it, which I get it, but then you can't accept the favor, dude. Sorry. Like, you can't have it both ways.
Yeah.
So she offers to take him for lunch or coffee, but he declines and finally says what we have been saying all season. Clip 5.
Kimberly, you did blow this place up. And to be honest with you, nobody can get past that. So, thanks again for the notes.
You know?
Yeah.
Boundaries. You know, people have them. I mean, I guess Amanda got past it for her own spiteful reasons against someone else, but whatever.
Mm.
So the pool guy, who, by the way, at this point we see is in a t-shirt that reads, I do pools and I want it. It has like a little ring around it that looks like a pool, you know, a lane swimming divider. It's very cute.
Mm-hmm.
He heard the whole thing. And as Kimberly goes on her way, he stops her to say he gets off at 5 and would love to have dinner with her. Like, dude, you heard the part about her trying to blow the place up, right? Like, I know she's hot, but come on.
Yeah.
And yet, when we see them next, she's rolling off him and being kind of a fuckboy about it. Clip 6.
Did you think it was that special?
Yeah. I've got the scratches on my back to prove it.
I was just trying to get that tacky I do pool t-shirt off you.
Hey.
Now you can put it back on and get out.
Well, let me at least buy you dinner.
You reek of chlorine. I don't want to have pizza with you. I'm just interested in your body.
Hey, I'm not just a dumb jock. I had a whole year of college.
Really? Well, then I'm sure you can find your way out.
Atta girl.
Smelling like chlorine is not the worst thing a guy can smell like if you pick him up, by the way.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Mm-hmm.
At least he smells clean.
It's not a crime scene tech. Come on.
Yeah. So later, Peter finds Amanda. She's leaving work for the day in a totally bizarre, like, it looks like upholstery. It's red, sort of flocked. You can see it in the visual aids. It's a dress with a matching jacket. That's not it.
Mm-mm.
He knows she's annoyed by the time he's spending with Kimberly, so he has cut down on Kimberly's sessions, which, like, yes, less therapy, that's the answer. But Amanda doesn't care. Peter adds that he got the court to remove Kimberly's monitor in an off-screen scene that, like, we really need to see. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But he did it so he and Amanda can spend more time together, but she doesn't want to spend more time with Peter. In fact, they should just part as friends now. So Peter grabs her arm and tells her he loves her. He's never felt this way about anyone before or tried this hard with anyone. Clip 7.
Now, I know that I've made some mistakes with you in the past.
That's putting it mildly.
Yeah, yeah, it is.
It is.
Tried to kill her.
Jesus. Oh, odd.
You know, like a face turn, it's so hard to pull off, way harder than a heel turn. And like, there's so many areas where they're just not getting there.
No.
Like, I want to see these two together because they're cute and they have chemistry. Like, she obviously really likes him. But in real life, I mean, Heather Locklear likes Jack Wagner and they ended up dating years later.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, you gotta lay more groundwork than this, than just like, well, I feel real bad. Like, okay, it's a good start.
I feel like they are banking on, like, enough new viewers not remembering exactly what happened in this previous storyline.
For
which,
sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
And also that they can just sort of, like, because Jack Wagner was Frisco and that was a good guy, they can just not do the work.
Yeah.
But it's like, look, one day there's going to be a podcast. And the thing is, he tried to kill her.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a shame. Anyway, he tries to psychoanalyze her, speculating that Jack fucked her up so bad she can't love anyone. And she's like, I just don't love you. Clip 8.
So I'll save you the trouble of pushing me away. I'm walking away.
Okay, you're walking away after she pushed you, but whatever you need to tell yourself.
Yeah. You can't fire me, I quit. And also, like, storming into an elevator is not effective.
No.
I've tried it.
How annoyed she looks, though. I mean, it might just be because he took her elevator. Not that he kissed her off.
Yeah.
Cut to Miami, where the stereotypes are as thick as the humidity. Clip 9.
Your mother wanted me to name you Vincenzo Jr., but I said no. I want my son named after royalty. After a Kennedy. After Bobby Kennedy.
Stood up to that cocktail-dressing Nazi director of the FBI and get rid of most of your enemies.
You listen, good kid. You always have.
Except for that one time she told me not to join the Navy.
Yeah, well, who knew you were going to win the Gulf War single-handed? Mr. Yeah. Big Shot Navy pilot. It's good you want to serve your country. You got other responsibilities now. Ain't that right, Nicholas?
Yes, sir, but Bobby already knows that. Hey, look, if you need me to stick around for
Nobody murders my son and gets away with it.
It was an accident. Yeah. That's the story we gave the papers, Bobby. Amanda pushed Jack over a rail. She had some doctor friends of hers cover it up. She goes by the name of Woodward these days. This photo is about a week old.
See, she's taken care of.
Oh, no, come on, Dad.
Kill her, Bobby. Kill her for your brother, Jack.
Come on, man. It's actually not a bad response.
Yeah.
is one comment I have. The other comment is that if John Enos III could fit in a fighter jet, I will eat my hat on television. He was the fighter jet. Come on. He's big,
I mean,
is what I'm saying.
I do believe that he could end the Gulf War single-handedly by just like stomping on it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Eno smash for sure.
But they mentioned in that clip the photo. This photo is from about a week ago. It is fully just a snapshot that Heather Locklear brought in from home. It's like her mm-hmm. at one of her own birthday parties opening
yes.
what looks to me like a black studded miniskirt. You mm-hmm. can see this in the visual aids, but it's really no effort. I mean, it's better than when they are like, here's from a week ago and it's a PR shot from like the press materials for the show.
Well, yeah. And also, like, I know the name changing stuff and faking her own death is like, she didn't bother to have any facial reconstruction, or
right.
at least they're not acting like she did. So it's like, you remember, she looks like Heather Locklear. Go get her.
Right.
Like,
right.
Oh, this is dumb.
Yeah. Like, it's not even like she changed her hair color. She was a blonde in her wedding photo. Like,
mm-hmm.
she looks exactly the same as when you knew her. And she's back to using her maiden name, which she would have also known before they got married, because that was her name. It was also Palmer's name.
Mm-hmm.
We do have more show to get to. But first, we have a message for Joe.
Joe's wife, Reva, writes, "My husband Joe has become a huge fan of both Again With This and Extra Hot Great Podcasts." Well, thanks, buddy. "And has specifically said more than once, Team Dave. Our wedding anniversary is September 1st. Happy anniversary. And I'm sure there are 5+ reasons he's a better husband than any of the guys on 90210 or Melrose Place. He's never grabbed my arm or forehead kissed me, is the opposite of David Silver and Brandon in every possible bray, etc." Reva, we could not agree more. Again, happy anniversary to both of you. And without further ado, 5 reasons Joe is definitely a superior spouse to anyone in the Starverse.
Number 1, Joe has not cheated on you with a fellow physician, accidentally killed said physician, or so he thought, while driving drunk, then married your sister like Michael Mancini.
Number 2, Joe did not call off your wedding the day of, bone you that night anyway, then take off 5 episodes later for an East Coast newspaper gig like Brandon Walsh.
Number 3, Joe did not extubate himself, die, probably, then sick his gangster dad and brother on you from beyond the grave like Jack Parisi.
Joe does not have weird hair that looked like a Burbank Wig Academy C- got dropped on his head from a third-story window, and if you died in an apartment complex explosion, he would probably mourn you for longer than 90 seconds, which is more than we can say for Richard Hart.
And finally, number five, Joe not mere pawn in Game of Your Life together, unlike Billy Campbell.
The Again With This Work Thruple congratulates you both and wishes you, in a normal timbre of voice, many more years of happiness together.
Happy anniversary, Joe and Reba! Now our B-plot. For Allison and Haley, the honeymoon is over before it begins. We open this plotline in Cancun, where Allison exits a pool at a resort straight into a towel Haley is holding open for her. When she says she likes the place, Haley tells her he'll give it to her as a wedding present. She thinks he's kidding, but he owns it. But all she cares about are working at D&D. Why? Did she get undemoted yet?
Yeah, really?
And spending time with her new husband. And they're about to kiss when the resort manager, Ricardo Lopez, comes over to pull Haley away. He is played by Enrique Castillo, a Hayesac guy you've seen a lot. He recurred on Weeds for a couple of years. And after pleasantries, Ricardo tells Haley he's scheduled a phone call with an interested buyer, whereupon Haley pulls him away to hiss at him to cancel it. Ricardo begs him not to blow the deal, but when he calls Haley by his first name, Haley grabs him by the lapels, just right out there on the pool deck where everyone can see in the middle of the afternoon, including a disturbed Allison, and is like, "It's Mr. Armstrong to you." And when Ricardo has left, Haley comes back to Allison all, "I think I've been out in the sun too long." But as he jumps in the pool, she's like, "Uh-oh, maybe I shouldn't have married a dude I only knew for 2.5 days. That night, Allison tracks Haley down by the pool with Ricardo. But before he sees her, she hears what is actually going on. Clip 10.
"The hotel is in trouble. Your debt payments are way out of control.
The offer on the table is an insult."
"Well, maybe. But if you sell, you're only out a couple of million dollars."
"I am not selling. That's final."
"This is insane. It doesn't make sense."
"Look, never, never question me. You'll find yourself working down on the docks again where I found you."
"I was just checking to see if you found Mr. Armstrong."
"Yes, yes, thank you."
"Allison?"
"Oh."
"What's wrong, sweetheart?"
"Nothing. I'm just clumsy."
"Well, don't worry. Ricardo will clean it up."
"Right away."
Ricardo's also working on a nice luge to hawk in your appetizer. And Team Ricardo.
Yeah. Like, leaving aside all the business about owning and possibly selling this resort that's in trouble, like, if you treat any person who's in a service capacity in this way, like, you're bad. I don't care if you're their boss, you suck. And that's reason enough not to remain married to someone, frankly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, agree.
Haley then abruptly says he's sick of this joint and wants to leave. And Allison's like, "We just got here," but he's totally done. And she goes along with him. Back in L.A., Billy gets back from a workout to find Brooke on the bed, calling information for the resort in Mexico as if she would not already have the phone number for a hotel her father owns. Billy is surprised, not happily, to see her trying to get in touch with Haley and forcibly hangs up the phone and tells her to leave the newlyweds alone. And Brooke claims she was trying to reach Haley because there was a problem with the copy on his campaign, not her job, but admits it's going to take her a while to accept Allison as her stepmother, like maybe 20 or 30 years. And then Billy stops being the voice of reason and starts being a paternalistic fucking asshole. Clip 11.
"You know what? When they get back, you're going to apologize for your behavior."
"I don't take orders from you, Campbell. I'm your wife, not your slave."
"Brooke, what do you think you're going? Hey, get back here."
Arm grab.
"What, Mr. Tough Guy?"
"I'll tell you what, you're a whiny, selfish, immature little brat."
"Well, maybe I'm not the only one upset about Daddy marrying Allison."
"For God's sake, you're going to be a mother. Why don't you start acting like one?"
What is that line delivery? What is it?
I don't know. And the thing about this is, like, they could almost get there for me if this turned into them fucking because she thinks it's really hot when he treats her like he's her dad.
Right. Like, yeah.
You know?
This is the problem. Like, I mean, this is a problem, but like every interaction they have, he is annoyed by her as though she's like a 12-year-old little sister. And it's like, that can't be the way he is with this. Like,
right.
If it's some sort of like, you know, that's his kink, that she's a daddy's girl, little brat.
Yes.
Okay. But this is not how it's playing, because Andrew Hsu has a couple of facial expressions and neither of them is called for.
It's true. Yeah. Also, when he's stalking past her to grab her arm, you can see this in the visual aids. We see that one of the pieces of art in their little hallway from like the kitchen to the bedroom is a gigantic framed photo of Marlon Brando. Like, why? What?
I didn't even notice that. That's amazing.
It's real weird.
Is that so that there will be one good male actor in the frame?
I'm sure that's
the only reason I can think of.
Mm-hmm. So when Haley and Allison and Allison's cute red, white polka dotted dress.
Adorable.
It's real
Love
cute.
It.
You can see that in the visual aids too. When they all return to the steps of Armstrong Manor, he says they can't just walk in, and then grabs her up and carries her over the threshold, only to see that Brooke is there waiting for them. So much for that ultimatum. She's like, clip 12.
I hope I'm not intruding.
Well, you are.
Oh my God. I really have to say whoever blocked her on this, or maybe this is just Kristen Davis, but the way she sort of flounces into the scene is very childlike. And it's like, allegedly you are pregnant. It does seem like maybe you shouldn't be acting like this, but then it really works. Like, she's committed to being this like creepo, pitiable woman.
Yep.
And then she's in these scenes with Andrew Hsu, who is like undermining all of her work. So
It's really too bad for her that she got saddled with him. So she just blows past Haley like, we don't want to see you, get out, to say she's there to apologize for her reaction to their wedding, reminding them that her husband was once in love with Allison, and then Daddy said he was in love with Allison, and Allison's finally like, spit it out. And Brooke says she knows that Haley and Allison will make great grandparents. And Haley gives Brooke a big hug, and Allison fixes her face to be like, can't wait. But of course, that's not all. Clip 13.
I just have one lingering reservation about your marriage. Since Billy and I are about to have our first child, I don't think that he or she should have to share an inheritance with any children that you and Allison might have.
Well, Allison and I aren't planning on having a family, so you can quit worrying about that. I gotta make some calls.
Sure. Oh, no children. How sad. Well, if it would help, I could call you mom.
I don't know how Allison didn't kick her to death right there. But here's the other thing. Haley, your play is to be like, sharing zero is actually really easy. You're cut out of the will. Fuck off. Like, and
right.
Why don't you do that? Because she's horrible.
But. Yeah. I mean, I feel like this would be a moot point, though, since it's not his money. Her mother was the one who was rich. Like, that was why they had the whole thing about her trust, and that it was like some paltry amount of money every year.
Right.
So like, if it's not his money to give away, then it doesn't matter. Like, it's not, it won't pass to his descendants that are not also his late wives.
And if he has his own money, like, but he doesn't because the hotel is in trouble. So,
yeah. Spoiler. In the manor kitchen the next day, Haley comments on how quiet Allison's been, urging her not to let Brooke get to her. But Allison is like, it's not about Brooke. It's you and your secrets. He denies her accusation that he doesn't talk to her about anything. And she's like, oh, really? When did we discuss not having children? And he gives her the Richard from Friends. If having children means that much to her, they can. But her issue is the way he keeps her in the dark. She will not let secrets destroy her life again, and he promises to share everything from now on. Spoiler, he won't. We end with our A plot. Michael joins what then becomes a love heptagon. Yes, really. C Sydney invites Peter to a birthday party she's throwing Michael at the beach house. He is, expectedly, noncommittal, and she ignores his lack of enthusiasm, saying gifts are mandatory and then pivoting to the partnership agreement. She thinks Michael would appreciate an extra 4%. Peter turns her down flat, whereupon she grabs him by the tie and reminds him about the incriminating tape Amanda already said in the last episode wouldn't be admissible in court. And Peter doesn't care about the tape either and leaves. Sydney's kiss-off line to the empty room is clip 14.
Well, poo-poo to you, too.
Not your best.
No, no.
Richard and Joe return to the office from Hawaii, Joe acting pissy that everyone there knows they went together, and he shrugs that it was just a business trip, and before she can really respond to that, she notices all her shit haphazardly packed into boxes sitting in the lobby. And that's when Jane comes out and tells Joe she's finished at the company. And Richard points out that he and Jane are equal partners, so she can't fire anyone without a sign-off, and Jane just stares at him in response, like, bitch, what did you think would happen? Like,
yeah.
You can't pull these power plays when you don't have the power to play.
Yeah. Also, why don't you just quit? I know your name is on the door, but like, take a buyout.
Yeah.
Sell the ring, leave. She's not good at scheming.
She's not at all.
No.
So Richard tells Joe to unpack while he talks to Jane, pulling her into a conference room to say he trusts they can continue working together despite the awkwardness of the situation. You know, like he and Mackenzie did after they split up, which like, she was still obsessed with you, dude. Like, how good is this guy's dick? But anyway, Jane says she's not Mackenzie, except she is in this respect, and she's not using Joe on any of her shoots anymore, which like, I don't think he's going to sign off on you paying freelancers if you have an in-house salaried staff photographer, but good luck enforcing that one. Feel like it's going to end the way this one did. Mm-hmm. At Shooters, Shelley gives Jake a key to her shack in the Hollywood Hills that is also a cabin in the woods, but he's not ready to move in with her, which, you know, especially not after she was completely absent for the entire episode after they fucked. But with a hard edge in her voice, she says it's just a key, not a commitment. And he doesn't know why she's acting like this now. So she lists Joe coming back from Hawaii and all of Jake's friends blaming Shelley for the breakup. And he denies that's the case and invites her to the birthday party to get to know everyone better. And she's like, clip 15.
I would love to be your date, but I don't need to get to know these people any better than I already do. They like to hang out here, expect free drinks, and count on you for a helping hand. But they're not your friends, Jake.
Is that a bad point?
I was going to say, she sucks, but she's not wrong.
Yeah, it's true.
And to prove her point, just then, Matt enters, and Jake greets him with aggressive heartiness to exit his conversation with Shelley. And then Matt totally proves Shelley right by asking Jake for part-time work, although she is smirking a bit hard considering she also got her job at Shooters because Jake felt sorry for her. Mm-hmm. Jake reminds us all about the settlement from the hospital, but Matt says it's all going to his tuition, which, like, he didn't get anything when his dad just died? Like, nothing? Okay.
Yeah. Guess who doesn't remember that? The writers.
So Jake then tries to make Shelley the bad guy by calling her the bookkeeper and asking if they can afford to hire Matt, who then tells her all the restrictions on which shifts he would be able to even take. And bitterly, Shelley's like, anything for a friend. And Matt does not read her tone at all and just beams at her because it's Matt.
I know.
Sweet Matt. And then it's the party. Sydney explains to Michael later that it's 60s theme because he was born in 1966, even though the episode aired in 1995. But this is not quite mid-60s vibes. Like, the sheet cake has a peace sign on it, which is more late 60s, but whatever.
Yeah. I mean, this is assuming that Michael Mancini still has this many friends / people who would show up to a party for him.
Yeah.
To get free food, even though it's for him.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Yeah, like, are Jane and Sydney even speaking at this point, and yet Jane showed up on Sydney's invitation? I don't get it.
But. Yeah, and then Amanda is there just so she can not want to see Peter. Like, why? Right. Only on a soap.
It's like, true.
Just go home and take your bra off. It's fine. Nobody else wants to be there either.
Only on a soap or Real Housewives, which, same diff. But anyway, Matt comes in to say Michael just pulled into the driveway and then walks in bitching at Sydney about all the cars parked out front until everyone yells surprise, and fortunately he is delighted. Aww. Everyone's in a good mood until Jane looks across the room to see Richard with his arm around Joe and then gets all pissy. And Sydney tells them to start the dancing, and when they do, Jake also gets a turn looking at them all bitch-faced. And at the food table later, Sydney explains to Michael about the theme. It's all 60s food, and he is kind of adorably touched that she did all this for him. She wasn't sure if he would react as usual by getting mad, but no one's ever thrown him a surprise party before. She has lots of other presents and plans for improving his life, but he stops her by grabbing her head and giving her a serious kiss. And it's cute because I love these two, as previously discussed.
I don't think it's totally the best use of them to move them into this like total comedic Boris and Natasha place. But
yeah,
it, like whatever they're given to do, they do it well. So fine.
Yeah, it's true. On the deck, Shelley looks bored while Jake, already getting drunk, urges Jane to forget about Joe and Richard. And then Shelley changes tack, tenderly tucking Jane's hair behind her ear as she says this. Clip 16.
You know, Jane is the only person in your apartment complex that I can actually stand. You want to know why?
No, let me guess.
Because you are not a snob.
Oh, I can hand it to you, Jane. Shelley's got very high standards. You are to be congratulated.
Oh, thank you. You know, I have to agree with her. Our neighbors are snobs. I've always liked you, Jake. You're a good guy. You're a really, really decent guy. And so good looking. Isn't he good looking? I think I need another beer.
You don't, because that tequila acted really fast. And also, I think you're going to end up in a throuple with Shelley and Jake, and I don't hate it.
Yeah, this is the thing. Like, 10 years later, it would be unambiguous that this scene ends in the three of them fucking.
A tangle of love, yes, but no. Mm-hmm. Dear.
Yeah, it's a shame. It's like, it's totally the Twitter meme of like, we saw you across the bar and liked your vibe. Can we buy you a drink? But they're doing it to Jane. And Jane's already been there. Like, you know, why not?
Exactly.
Also, by the way, in this scene, Shelley is wearing a tank dress. It's like turquoise and covered with butterflies. And when you see it, if you were alive in the 90s, you'll be like, oh, that print. Yes, yes,
mm-hmm.
Yes.
Sure.
It was everywhere. Inside, Peter pulls Michael aside to tell him how Sydney tried to up Michael's profit participation through blackmail. And Michael cracks up at the level to which Sydney will stoop for his benefit. But Peter, less amused, tells Michael to destroy the tape and get Sydney off Peter's case or he's going to end their partnership. And then Jane is near an open window in her apartment when she hears Joe and her horrible dress seen in the visual aids. It's another satin number for daytime. Coming down with Richard and hears them talking a bunch of shit.
It's like she's a completely different person. I mean, Jane is turning into this lying, manipulating, backstabbing egomaniac.
And it's not like her talent supports it. Have you seen her latest designs?
They're so lame. I mean, at this rate, she's going to lose all her friends and her career. I should talk to her. You know, I mean, we used to be close. Play the old friends card.
Oh, hang on a second. I left my car keys upstairs.
Here.
Be right back.
Okay. Hi, Jane. I think we should talk. I mean, we are old friends.
No, Joe. We were friends.
That's Jane punching Joe.
Oh my God. I'm bleeding.
Next time I'll rip your heart out.
You need help.
Really? I think I did pretty well on my own.
You guys, I gasped at the punch. I did not see it coming.
Yeah, really, that was like, well, shocked. That was well put together, that scene. Because it's like, Jesus, okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Richard comes down to see Joe with blood all over her mouth. She orders him to do something about Jane, which, like, reasonable, and he promises he will, but that it'll take time. And at Shooters, Matt finally gets around to asking Jake what's going on with him and Joe. Clip 18.
I always thought you guys were meant for each other.
Well, you're a hopeless romantic, Matt.
Yeah, maybe, but...
What do you know about women anyway?
Probably more than you do, because I've been friends with them.
But...
I know Shelly's no Joe.
You know, Shelly happens to be the first woman in my life to drag me down.
How does Joe drag you down?
Seriously.
Yeah, really.
Then Jake can't answer because a meat guy is there with a COD order, and Jake doesn't know how to cut a check in Shelly's system, and since Shelly's at the bank, Matt offers to try to figure it out, but Jake doesn't even know what his password is because Shelly did not mention there was one, and Matt wonders why. Cut to the bank, where Shelly is putting cash into a very full safe deposit box, because...
I mean, at Shooters? That's like tens of thousands of dollars, I just, on this timeline, no way.
Sarah.
It's all hundreds, too. Like, it would be all, like, crumply, stinky fives and stuff. Like,
was it? I thought some of them were 20s. But, yeah, I mean, you're forgetting, Sarah, they just started dance night, so...
You're...
twice a week. So
you're right.
At the studio, Allison shows up to have lunch with Jane and also ask about her Mike Tyson impression earlier. And Jane, grinning remorselessly, says Joe had it coming, and Allison laughs bitchily, which, like, no.
No.
Allison's not like that. Mm-mm. Allison eventually gets around to sternly telling Jane to get over Richard, but Jane thinks she just needs to get his attention by making him jealous. She needs to find a guy who's a professional with a good income and whom she's maybe been in love with before. And Allison figures out she means Michael, and they both start giggling, and I hate this. Speaking of Michael, Sydney comes home to an elaborately romantic setup, including Michael in silk pajamas and robe. It's his way of thanking her for the party, and he sits her down by the fire, then produces the incriminating cassette. She tries to grab it away and can't believe he found it hidden in a box of tampons. Classic. And while she struggles with him, he tosses it into the fire, and she yelps that it's worth a fortune, but he stops her trying to pull it out, saying he's sick of living in fear of her. While he still has the hot poker in his hand and looks quite threatening, she cowers, telling him not to be mad. She assumes she knows where the conversation is going to end up. Clip 19.
So in plain English, pack my bags and get out, right?
Actually, I'm sitting flush right now because of you. I'd be perfectly honest. I don't mind having you around. So, you promise to behave.
Cross my heart, hope to die, never tell a dirty lie.
And you can stay.
See, this is what it could be with Brooke and Billy, because he's clearly, Michael's treating Sydney like, you know, the dizzy kid that she was when he first met her. And, you know, this works for him, for both of them. They both like this.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
At the end of it, he, like, taps his lips, like, give me a kiss, and she does.
Knock
and,
me a kiss. It's so cute.
So cute.
I mean, I'm not as much a Calabro guy as you are, but, like, there have been some scenes lately where I'm like, fine.
Yeah. You get it.
He Panties makes you meet get floor. It. Got it. Yeah, he does. He does.
The next morning, Michael's awakened by a phone call. Jane has a birthday present for him, and just like that, they're on for dinner at Anthony's that night. And that's when we see Allison was there, listening to Jane's half of the conversation. She hopes Jane knows what she's doing. Remember how I said they were on for dinner at Anthony's? Well, the establishing shot is Montezino's, a place we've seen a bunch of times before.
Oh.
Like, just don't say it. Or say, like, whatever.
Yeah.
While they wait to be seated, Jane hands off her gift, a tiny envelope containing Michael's old frat pin, Alpha Alpha Epsilon, if that means anything to anyone, or is even a real frat, I have no idea.
I don't either.
She's dismissive about it since it doesn't really have any intrinsic value, but he disagrees and gets nostalgic. Clip 20.
Remember when I gave this to you?
Yeah, it was our third date.
Mm-hmm. And you jumped right in the sack with me.
I thought you gave me that pin because you were falling in love with me.
Oh, I was. But I also wanted to get laid. Hey, Jane, you got to admit, it was a hell of a night.
I
don't appreciate something until it's gone.
You know, you would think that Michael would be better at recognizing when he is being manipulated the way he routinely manipulates every other person in his life. But I do think the show has established that, like, he has a blind spot where Jane is concerned, like, treats her as this untouchable, you know, wasp goddess that he's still.
Well, and also that she was such a drip that yeah. I don't think it would occur to him that she would manipulate anybody. So that's where she can be a Viking if yeah. she plays it right, which she probably won't because it's Jane, but I guess we'll see.
And that's it. Let us close out by naming our episode MVP.
I mean, Michael, I guess.
Yeah. I mean,
he's like, everybody's throwing themselves at him. He wasn't a total idiot. He destroyed the tape, which is whatever. Thank you. Like, please end that part of that storyline yeah. by any means necessary. He was cute. It was his birthday. Everyone else was kind of bad. So, yeah. Michael.
Well, he's definitely the MVP of my pants. So I will agree with all of your points. Great job. Here's where it's going to get harder. Least valuable player. Haley, hands off the staff, dude.
Yeah. And get a haircut. It's getting bad.
Also, like, clearly this is headed to a Haley's in big financial trouble storyline. Like, find some other dumb rich woman to marry you. Don't marry Allison.
Yeah. She's just dumb.
She's dumb and broke. That doesn't serve you at all.
Yeah. Good luck to you. Next time on Again With This, Haley's can't whisper phrenia flares up. Kimberly gets tied up. The jig is up with Shelley and the laptop. And the Melrose Place complex adds another absolute unit when Jack's brother Bobby comes to town. Speaking of things you can almost see from space, it's our visual aids. You can find those for this and every episode of Again With This at againwiththispodcast.com. That's also where you can find links to our very special 90210 book. You can follow us on Twitter at AWT90210 and join our Patreon page at patreon.com/againwiththis. Any level of support gets you extra episodes. I'm Taj Mahal, Maitre D, Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is fast-acting tequila shot, Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is unpermitted bedroom skylight, David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.